And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Hello out there in Radio Land. Welcome to a special miniature episode of One Track Mind that I'm creatively calling OTM Mini. I am Ryan Luis Rodriguez, your wonky yet affable host and born-again cinephile. Last time on OTM Mini, we started a new Q&A, but there were just too many Qs to A in one episode, so we're extending it even further! First up, quote, "What is the most challenging part of podcasting?" Unquote. For me, it's twofold. Sometimes with my depression, it's a struggle to get out of bed in the morning on weekends to get started on writing recommendations or recording episodes, and time management can be quite difficult, especially since I have a set schedule, and with the Patreon, episodes have to be out on a weekly basis. Now that we're doing these minis, that's part of it. And the exclusive episodes, which need to be fully researched. It's beyond a part-time job, despite the fact that I do have a full-time job, and it cuts down on the number of movies I get to watch that aren't in the background, which really bums me out. I am happy to do the show, but sometimes I wish that it was my only source of income. I would get so much more done that way. Second, and I think this came up in a previous Q&A, if not, it came up on the Patreon, the editing process is a nightmare. I have to listen to my voice, which is my single least favorite sound, and it's tremendously tedious. Now that practically every episode has a guest, I have to sit through a 40-minute real-time version of the conversation, and I have to listen to every moment in order to tidy up the pacing and make sure that there aren't any stumbling points. So my favorite part of Reels of Justice is that we have skilled editors, my co-hosts Rob and Ben, whose involvement thankfully prevents my having to juggle five voices at once. Next, quote, "How do you look at your watch list and decide to what to watch next?" Unquote. Funny enough, my watch list on Letterboxd, I've never looked at it. When I see a movie I want to see, I add it to the list, but it just sits there unused. When I get recommendations, I add it to my notes app, but I rarely get around to them. Frankly, it's a gut response. If I'm on a streaming service for whatever reason, and I notice something that strikes my fancy, to use a term that I probably shouldn't be using as a 37-year-old, I just pull the trigger and watch it in the moment. My personal collection is divided between movies I've seen and movies I haven't, and I just eyeball it. If I have a day off, I'll actually check the runtimes and accumulate a stack that will last me from the AM to the PM, and there is no rhyme or reason to it. Next up, quote, "Favorite comfort media," unquote. Now, I'm glad you specified media and not movies, because I try not to watch movies too many times. Although, I did watch Valley Girl 3 times in 3 months about a year ago, but that's because I was in a depressive midlife crisis spell. What I always retreat to when I'm in a bad headspace is the various VH1 I Love The series, which I was obsessed with in college. Probably because I didn't know that I had a real crush on Michael Ian Black, and I find them so comforting. Specifically, I Love the 80s Strikes Back, I Love the 80s 3D, and I Love the 90s Part Deux. I start anticipating my favorite bits, always the movie and the TV segments, and I start fantasizing about what stuff they would cover if they were still making those shows. I even put together a list when I was like 22, of a future I Love the 70s, future I Love the 80s, future I Love the 90s, and I illustrated which movies and TV shows I would talk about in each year, because I am pathetic. It's weird, but I dig it. Quote, "Is there a film you consider a masterpiece that is considered trash by most people?" Unquote. I don't know if I'd call them masterpieces, but I have a real affinity for the Charlie's Angels movies, these heightened maximalist mayhem machines, a vehicle for on-the-nose needle drops and outsized moments that feel like the closest that American movies will get to Bollywood musicals, like McGee's version of Doom, or Doom 2, rather. I can't stand anything else the man has made, but I will definitely be watching Full Throttle again, and if they actually put it out in 4K, just like the original, in a heartbeat. Quote, "Is the biopic naturally flawed?" Unquote. Yes. There's something about trying to condense an entire human life into a two-hour time span, which can reduce some of the most important moments to footnotes, and maybe Malcolm X aside. But there are kinds of biopics that actually work, and that's when a director and writer focus on a specific period in a person's life, a couple of years, or a momentous moment. You can encapsulate everything a major biopic tries to offer without sacrificing coherence and allowing the audience to go and ask actual questions about the rest of that person's life. Quote, "What is your favorite kind of weather and why? What do you enjoy doing during that kind of weather?" Unquote. "My favorite weather is fall rainstorms, even spring rainstorms. The smell is just intoxicating, and the cold, I love the cold, I hate the heat, but I don't actually like being in the actual weather. I like opening my bedroom window, especially when it's howling outside and the wind shakes the trees in my front yard, and just letting it be the soundtrack to my life. It's my favorite thing in the world." Quote, "This one seems kind of silly, but I'll answer it. How does one become the most featured guest on One Track Mind?" Oh, I forgot to say quote, "How does one become the most featured guest on One Track Mind?" Unquote. Interesting. We've only had one return guest so far, but I always intended to reach 100 episodes before letting anyone recur. But now that I know how hard it is to schedule, I'm gonna start to reach out to my favorite people. And if you have a favorite person who's already been on the show, let me know and we'll get it done. So, who knows going forward? If someone had a good time on the podcast and specifically requests to come back for a certain movie that's on their minds, for sure I will make that happen. Quote, "Have you ever snuck food and drinks into a movie theater?" Unquote. I personally haven't, but back in the day, my mom and I would do movie marathons every 3 months. And this is like, probably not even teenage age. No, wait, yes. Because I remember the one that sticks to mind is we went to go see a bunch of movies in 1998. And one of them was Lethal Weapon 4, which is a lot darker and more violent than I think probably a 12-year-old person should be watching. But my mom let me sit through it. So that's pretty cool. But every 3 months, we would pick 4 movies and spend the entire day at the theater. And she would purchase candy at Long's Drugs and sneak it in her purse. Now, if you want to talk about actually sneaking into movies, in high school, every Saturday, I would plan an entire day with my friends through the runtime listings on Fandango. Remember that? And we would just traverse the theater between showings at the local multiplex. And never, not once, did we ever get caught. I have no idea how, because we weren't exactly subtle about it, and we would mostly watch R-rated movies, but that's the truth, Ruth. Quote, "Have you ever walked out of a movie, and why?" Unquote. I actually have a policy of always finishing a movie when I start it, probably due to my OCD, but there was the time that I saw The Squid and the Whale at the downtown San Jose Indie Theater, the Camera 12, which sadly no longer exists. There was this shifty-looking guy in the second row, and he kept turning away from the screen and looking me directly in the eyes, and it unnerved me so much that I had to go like 40 minutes in. And I didn't even finish the film until 2022, when I bought the Criterion Blu-ray. Great movie. More often, I've actually fallen asleep during a movie, and by that, I mean 3 times. Zack Snyder's 300. The first time I saw Skyfall, I was unusually tired despite being an extreme insomniac. And the Luc Besson movie, Lucy, which, like Squid and the Whale, I didn't actually watch until 2 years ago when I picked up the 4K disc for like $10. Surprisingly fun. Quote, "What is the best commentary track for people who want to listen to one but don't know where to start?" Unquote. Honestly, and I hope we cover it on the podcast soon, the one I recommend the most is Cameron Crowe's track for Almost Famous, which he recorded with his mom. It's on the director's cut, which means that it's almost 3 hours long, but there's such a warm vibe to the entire proceedings, and it's like a parallel movie in its own right. If you can listen to that and not want to listen to more, even if it's just Cameron Crowe tracks, all of which are awesome, then I don't know what to tell you. Quote, "If you were to go on a game show, what would it be?" Unquote. If Jeopardy had episodes that were purely pop culture questions, I would slay that shit. Unfortunately, they want you to know about U.S. history and, I don't know, Great Lakes and science, all of which I did not pay attention to in high school, and it explains my rather limited scope of knowledge. Quote, "If you could cater a 6-film retrospective for any filmmaker, who would you choose and which films?" Unquote. Ooh, I like this question. The first that comes to mind is Robert Altman, specifically because I never saw any of his movies in the theater, especially while he was alive, because I just, a lot of them didn't make it nearby or didn't look appealing to me at the time because I was a dumb teenager. And most of them I've actually recommended or discussed on this podcast. But in case you're hearing this for the first time, I would choose, let's see, Brewster McCloud, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, The Long Goodbye, Nashville, Three Women, Popeye, and kind of as a bittersweet topper, A Prairie Home Companion, which was his last movie. And when you know that, when you're going in and knowing that a man was dying while he made that movie, it really hits you in a different way because it's really about mortality and the eventual expiration of life. I would love to do a program for Steven Soderbergh, but I can't pick just six. I would watch all of them, even the ones I don't like. But the one I want to watch the most at the moment, I'm working on a Reels of Justice case right now on Ferrari, and I would love to do a program on Michael Mann, specifically his theatrical versions, because he keeps revising them, and I want to see them the way that they would have been in the theater. And the six would be Thief, Manhunter, Heat, Ali, Collateral, and Miami Vice. I want to see his grainy digital photography on 35mm, and his early film work must look amazing projected. Finally, quote, "What is your favorite disco song?" Unquote. I assume this question was made in jest, but I actually have several answers. I was not raised on disco. In fact, by the time I came of age, it was definitely passé. But when I was obsessed with music throughout my college years, I actually stumbled upon several albums that I would groove to if I actually grooved. The first would be Night Fever by the Bee Gees, easily the loveliest song on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. Yes, even lovelier than How Deep Is Your Love, which I do not care for. When I had a bike riding playlist, back when I still subscribed to Apple Music, because I hadn't really immersed myself in podcast backlogs, I made sure to listen to it almost every time. Also great, Gloria by Laura Branigan. I referenced it during the Coolness Chronicles run when, tongue-in-cheek, I claimed that the SportsCenter theme ripped it off, but to be totally honest, I love that goddamn song. If you don't consider it to be disco, I will point out the rudimentary music video, in which the set is practically drowned out by an oversized disco ball, and if there's a shiny ball involved, it's disco. Unless we're talking about Phantasm. That's a very different shiny ball. And finally, it's hard to cover the best of disco without touching upon Donna Summer in some way. Just the horniest music that you could possibly imagine. Specifically, I Feel Love, which might be Giorgio Moroder's finest work. Bonus points for the cover by the Blue Man Group and Venus Hum, which swaps the synths for percussion and might actually be a better song. It's definitely 3 minutes shorter, so it has that going for it. That'll do it for now. Stay tuned for a full-blown episode next week, and 2 weeks from now, we continue this odyssey known as OTM Mini. Don't forget to check us out on the social medias at One Track Mind Podcast on X. One, that is the numeral one, Track Mind Podcast on Instagram. One Track Mind on Blue Sky, on Facebook, on Podchaser, or send an email for perhaps a future Q&A at onetrackmindpodcast@gmail.com. And find us on Patreon, patreon.com/onetrackmindpodcast. Plenty of bonus content. Every other week we have something, and you get every episode early. Until then, see you soon.
Darn, that's the end.